Good morning to the Carlton faithful. This is Tony DeVolfo speaking to you here from the Carlton Media Centre at Icon Park. I'm opening the betting today for the two tones. You might find that somewhat surprising. We are one tone down, and yet in many respects we have not lost a tone, because in the absence of Tony Moclair, who is, as we speak, on Kangaroo Island, it is a great pleasure to introduce one of the great Carlton men and a fellow tone, Mr. Tony Tardio from 3RW. Tony, good morning
Tony
to you.
Tony DeVolfo, wonderful to be here. Let me say, it is a big honour to be and to hold this particular microphone that I've got here with the Carlton signage on it. It's great. And big shoes to fill too. I don't know how I'm going to do it, Tony.
I'm sure you'll capably do so, Tony.
I'm a bit nervous about it.
You shouldn't be. In fact, you should be being a great Carlton man, upbeat, buoyant and totally... in love with life at the moment, given the events of last Sunday evening at the MCG?
Well, I am, and I tell you why I am. Number one, because we won, but I've got a young son at home, Damien, and his life and his moods depend very much on how Carlton goes on the football ground.
Well,
and he was all over the place.
Well, I saw him. I saw him down there in the winner's circle at the weekend, Tony, and what you say is totally right, because thinking about that win, that meritorious performance in the wet against Essendon, you actually come away as a supporter, you feel good.
Yes.
It is actually good for the health. And it's been a long time since Carlton people have perhaps, you know, had an opportunity to feel that way. And probably one of the great highlights of in the aftermath of that performance was to actually see and feel how Jack Silvani felt in the wake of that first win in a Carlton Guernsey.
Absolutely. And I think it's been 13 matches since Carlton had a win, which is, you know...
Unlucky 13, Tony.
This is unheard of for Carlton.
Yes.
And really, when you look back, it's been a pretty challenging... I won't say 20 years, but I'll say maybe 17, 18 years. I mean, 99, we made it to the grand final, which is a pretty good performance in itself. And, of course, we had the highlight of 99, which was the preliminary final against Essendon. But since then, it's been pretty tough.
It's been,
but that's where you get character from, Tony.
Well, that's very true, Tony. Perhaps people of our generation have seen great successes at Carlton. We have.
Yeah.
But you know what? The next one will be the sweetest for sure, given what we've been through.
Well, you know, I'm sure Damien is pretty much like every other supporter, and he says to me that... the longer it takes, the sweeter it'll be. But he says, you know, he's scared that when they finally do win a premiership, his interest is not going to be the way it is now, because they just haven't been able to win yet. He hasn't done it in... Well, you see, he was really young when they won in 95. He doesn't really have much of a memory of it. But, I mean, I told him, Damien, I remember 1968, and I remember, you know, the 79 and 81 and 82, and I was there in 87 on 31 or 32 degree day. So we've had big success over the years, and it'll come back. And, you know, I like what I saw on the weekend.
When you reflect on those great days at Carlton, it would be remiss of me not to ask you this question. You've obviously been a lifelong Carlton supporter, Tony, but what was the trigger? Was it family? Was it fate? Where you lived? What was the story?
Well, I grew up on a banana plantation in northern New South Wales. And because I was from Melbourne, and I was originally born here, but I was two or three when we left, I always had this, you know, big interest in Melbourne, and I loved to know what was going on. And Carlton was a big suburb. And not only that, but Jezza was the and Barassi were the only players that seemed to travel over the boundaries, you know, north of Victoria. We didn't know any other players. We had no idea who Ted Whitten is. It wasn't until I came back to Melbourne. So that was why in the 60s I sort of fell in love with Carlton. And I remember being on my uncle's balcony in Coffs Harbour overlooking the town during the 1973 grand final. Was that Carlton-Richmond?
Carlton-Richmond it was.
Richmond won that
game. They did indeed.
Yeah, I have a memory of listening to the call on the radio and hearing the boom of the huge MCG. I mean, in those days, there were over 100,000 people in the ground. So I had a soft spot for Fitzroy as well, because I lived not live, but I was born in Clark Street in Northcote, and Fitzroy was just across the river.
Yes.
And I loved the Fitzroy theme song because it was the French national anthem. So, you know, I did have a soft spot for, and I felt sorry for them when they, you know, when the AFL made the decision. It wouldn't happen now.
It wouldn't happen now. They'd be protected. But when you mentioned Jesolenko, it's very funny you should do so, because the great man was into the club earlier this week, because he's at the 50th anniversary of his first game for the Carlton Football Club is fast approaching. And what a player he was, Tony.
Well, yeah, he was a man, you know, like a genius of a player. And that mark that he took in 1970 is iconic. But also the other thing that I liked about Carlton and Jesolenko and all of these names, you know, you've got a name with a vowel that ends, you know, ends in a vowel. I've got the same. And this is what Carlton and football and these sort of guys, the Silvanis, I noticed there was a video out the front when I came in. They integrated us into the Australian way of doing things, which is what this club and other clubs have done, but particularly Carlton. I think there have been a lot of, you know, I always tell people, which is a great question to ask at, nights when you're asking questions, who is the only Italian-born AFL, VFL player? I know you know the answer. Peter Bevilacqua. And he's the only guy born in Italy. He's born in our town.
And played for the Carlton Football Club. One senior game.
He played one game, that's right.
And it wasn't even here, Tony. It was at Arden Street, an away game against North Melbourne.
Is that right?
So, but...
he's still alive.
Still alive.
He lives in Tasmania,
correct. We need to get him on.
Absolutely.
Now, it's lovely to hear you reflect, but we need to look at the more immediate events. And, of course, we turn our attentions again back to the MCG last Sunday. A 15-point slog in the rain, as has been noted, Tony. A game where Carlton really had to prevail, you know, to first of all get the lead and then protect that lead in a really, really difficult game. Physically, the conditions were atrocious. We rarely see it these days. As you said off air, you know, you remember the days of the old glue pots at Glenferrie or wherever.
I must say the ground held up magnificently.
It did.
You know, you don't see any players come off with any mud nowadays.
You do not. But there was so much, Tony, to like from the team performance. There are so many highlights. And we have here, you know, before us, Mark Murphy's, you know, game as captain of the club. A great captain's game, marked by a magnificent captain's goal to the punt right end. It was a brilliant goal. We had five teenagers all being so remarkable in their poise and maturity for their 10-year years. Harrison McCreedy, Petrevsky Seaton, Jack Silvani, Wiedering and Tom Williamson in his first game.
Petrevsky Seaton, now that's a hyphenated name if ever I've heard.
Yes,
That was his first game, wasn't it?
No. Petrevsky Seaton has started the year playing for the club.
Right.
Williamson was in his first game at the weekend. But I think what those boys collectively have brought to the place is this dynamism that is rubbing off on the senior players. They are truly leading the way for the club. And I think what's interesting, Tony, with the younger guys these days, they don't have any worry for reputation or who they might be lining up on. It doesn't mean a thing to them.
Well, they've got no fear.
No fear. And they just attack it. And you know, I remember when I, you know, was a kid that, you know, you thought you were, you know, unbreakable, you know, and that's
invincible,
how they...
Invincible, absolutely.
Absolutely, and that's the way they're playing, and it's and this is really rubbing off on the group as a whole. The back six of Carlton, I mean, the team within the team, we've got players like, you know, Sam Rowe, Plowman, Sam Doherty now, Simpson, the old head. You know, Sam Rowe, he's been miserly. Three games, he's kept Jack Revolt, Jesse Hogan, and now Joe Danaher to the collective tally of one goal. And, I mean, he's been enormous. And I think it's just... I think as time goes on, we're seeing this team gel to understand Brendan Bolton's game plan and to really deliver it with great effect. And I think it's so exciting to see this group developing.
Absolutely. I like, too, the balance of the older players and the younger players. I mean, you've got to play the younger players. I heard Dermot Brereton, I think, talking about this during the week. You've got to play the younger players, but you just can't play the younger players because you don't want them demoralised.
No.
You know, and they showed some pictures of, you know, players marshalling other players which I really liked as well.
You know,
like if you're a senior player and you know with you that you know how to play the game and where what to do and stuff, you know, like that's what you got to do it on the ground.
Well, very true. I've heard it said, Tony, that you know coaches don't have the opportunity really to impart a message direct until the breaks. You know, quarter time, half time. Why wait? You know, if the players are out there and they see something that's amiss or isn't right, it's up to them to take the lead and to get it right.
Absolutely.
And so what you're doing is you're forcing these players to think about their performances and what's best for the team. And I think what's great about it, Tony, is that we're seeing a collective improvement across the board. On Sunday, it wasn't so much the fact that Carlton won, it was how they won.
Yes.
And that is perhaps what's most inspiring about this team at the moment.
Well, there's also, I mean, I see some good players coming up. I mean, I really like Wietering.
Yes.
Wietering's a magnificent player.
Do you like him forward or back? It's the great
question.
Well,
that's the question. You know, like I like him forward because I want him to kick goals, but I don't want to let goals go. So, but he came off the ground. What's the story with him?
He got a pretty nasty knock to the head. There was an inverted head clash. He was actually forced by Fantasia into Hurley, and he and Hurley clashed heads, and he came off second best. To his credit, he came back onto the ground and showed tremendous heart, you know, and we certainly needed him when the whips were cracking later in the game.
So he's not concussed or anything like
that? No.
That.
He's okay, finished off the game strongly, and will no doubt be there for the Gold Coast match. But it was just there were just so many things to like about this performance. You know, young Williamson, we talked about him, boy from Ararat. He said after the game, Tony, that he felt right at home. It was Ararat weather and he didn't have an issue. A lovely, lovely player, a beautiful mover, ranging left foot kick. Reminds me a little bit of the fellow at Hawthorne, Isaac Smith, the way he moves. So just
right.
A very good. And again, another kid that just hasn't let the team or the club down. And, you know, we're going to see more players like this bob up through the course of the year and get games into them, and that can only be good for Carlton.
Absolutely. Now, it would have been a great moment in the rooms because we had a former president in there giving him the Guernsey, is that right?
Correct. Stephen Kernahan, before the game, gave Tom Williamson his Guernsey and spoke about leadership, what it meant to represent the club.
He didn't sing in there, did he?
No, he spared us the ordeal, Tony. But it was lovely to see him back in the room. Now, there's a Carlton man through and through, you know, and it must be particularly heartening for Sticks to see the team on the rise.
Yes.
Because, you know, you talked about those 15 or 16 years that we were in the wilderness and Sticks tried to keep the club afloat.
Well, he did keep it afloat.
That's right. That's right.
Instrumental in a lot of things. And and given the career that he had here and seeing what was happening when he was the president, it would have been a pretty difficult period.
Very true. And you mentioned 1968, the grand final against Essendon in 68. Another person conspicuous by his presence in the room afterwards was the former number 32, Brian Quirk, who actually kicked the last goal in the 68 grand final. In the third quarter, it was a low-scoring affair, and he kicked the last goal of the game. But Brian was there to ring the old time bell prior to the match for the club. And so to be there for the Essendon game, to see history repeat on the MCG, I saw him in the rooms after the game, and I said to him, he was there with his grandson, I think it was, I said, "How do you feel about that?" He said, "I shed a tear today." And he said, so that was what that performance meant to a player who's been there to the mountaintop for Carlton against Essendon. So what this is doing for the collective psyche of the supporters of Carlton, you know, it's just magnificent, Tony. It's great to see.
Well, as we said earlier, before we got on, you know, confidence is a big thing, isn't it? I mean, you know, like you can have all the skills in the world. Greg Chappell was the best batsman that Australia produced for many, many years, and he went through this period where he kept getting ducks all the time because he lost confidence. So no matter what his technique, no matter how good he was previously, when he was in that confidence lull, it was pretty difficult. And that's the thing about it. Once you have a win like we did last weekend, and let's say we have another one, what does that do to your confidence? It would be enormous, I would think.
Absolutely. And it'll continue to grow. You know, it's I think what we have to hope now, looking ahead to the Gold Coast, which we have to, I mean, it's a very short turnaround time to Saturday night. So the coach and the players have had very little time to dwell and savour that victory over Essendon.
And this is a danger game too, isn't it? Because Gold Coast didn't start that well, but they had a big game last week.
Well, they demolished Hawthorn, yes. You know, they really did. And obviously, you know, with Gary Ablett under such scrutiny and finding form and preparing for game number 100 for the Gold Coast Suns this week, Tony, it'll be a big game for sure.
Now, this is at the MCG. I thought it was at Etihad.
It is at Etihad Stadium, Tony, and we would expect Carlton people to turn out in force on the strength of that performance against Essendon last week. And the players, you know, really feed off the energy that the supporters bring.
Bring your Carlton scarf. Now, Tony, I heard on the radio, I heard some guy ring up Neil Mitchell saying that the Hawthorn scarf was 15 centimetres shorter this year than last year. Is the Carlton scarf the same length?
I haven't been out with a ruler to measure up, so you've caught me quite cold. Was the
guy complaining about it? Because his scarf kept falling off.
Oh,
and then he compared it to the Melbourne scarf, and the Melbourne scarf was 15 centimetres longer.
Is that right? Well, I can't answer that question in terms of scarf length, but
I noticed we had it. It was not white this time. Now, was that the first time we've ever had a jumper without the white?
Well, we've had it in the reverse. Like if we played away, you might have the blue monogram on the white background, or there's that. Or the M&M's game was still the white CFC.
Think it's the 20th anniversary of the M&M's.
It is indeed. But this was the blue out Guernsey. So it was the Guernsey against Essendon was designed to be a throwback to the old streets of Carlton and the blue stone that you know that was so conspicuous in the old Grattan, Lygon Streets, Rathdown, those sorts of things. It obviously worked. It worked for Jack. Jack loved it, you know, and as I said, he was so thrilled with the outcome, you know. First win to Carlton Guernsey, I just couldn't believe that. I know Jack, it seems like a long time ago that Jack Silvani made his senior debut, and yet to think that all that time he's never played in the Carlton victory.
Well, I remember seeing him here against Essendon the practice match last year. Remember it was a warm day and a big crowd turned up.
Yes.
I think they ran out of pies and hot dogs that day at half time.
Very true, very true. And, yet, you know, you mentioned the M&M's game, you know, 20 years ago. There was a fellow that played in that game. His name escapes me for the moment. I've relayed this story before. South Australian player who played one game for the Carlton Football Club, and that was the game. So unfortunately, his only keepsake from that game is an iridescent blue Guernsey. Unfortunately, but he treasures it. It's in a frame and on the wall of his bar back home in Adelaide.
Of course he would.
Tony, we've talked a lot about the game, and we did mention in passing that great goal of Mark Murphy's at the punt road end, that banana kick that delivered with great effect.
Would they practice that?
Absolutely.
Have you seen him do it here?
I haven't seen him kick the banana. You tend to see, some of those goal sneaks more perfecting it. You know, you might see, maybe Jared Pickett or young Fisher, guys that, you know, float around the forward pocket and they do it automatically. So I don't know where Murphy pulled that one from, but it was a great goal. And I'm sure he it wasn't an accident. I'm sure
it was
by design.
Well, he led back and just sort of like that curve on the ball is,
It was a great goal and a great captain's goal at an important time of the game. And that's what you want your captain to do, to stand up when the situation demands, you know. And Murphy, you know, he's only a man of small stature. He gets precious little from the umpires, in my opinion, because he's one of those players that puts his head over the ball. And football's been cruel to him. You know, he's suffered a lot of injuries through the journey. That's part and parcel of the game, of course. But the good thing with Murphy, Tone, is that he's had a full pre-season, and it certainly shows that his body is standing up for him. And I think it was mentioned by Lockie Plowman this week when I spoke to him that there's only three players really that are physically not quite there at the moment, and that's a good result leading into the season.
Absolutely. I wanted to ask you, Tony, you being a football follower, a very intense football follower, what do you think of this sort of deliberate out of bounds, because it happened in that game on the weekend? The ball bounced three times before it... I mean, I know it was to our advantage, I know, but... Was that deliberately out of bounds?
I must admit, it was a tough call. But look, players are pretty smart now in how they use the ball, and they've got great control in where they want the ball to go. To keep the game going, I can see the method behind the madness in umpires making.
But imagine if that happened in a grand final, and you know it was to our disadvantage.
Would it happen in the grand final?
No,
it would get back to the courage of the umpire to make the call, wouldn't it? But look, I think what it might do, generally speaking, is to try and encourage players to keep the ball alive. I don't think that's such a bad thing myself, to keep the game going. I suppose what it comes down to is, do we want to see the ball kept in play more, or do we want to see boundary throw-ins? Well, you'd always go for the latter, you know, to see the game flow. Yes. So I don't think it's a bad thing. And I think if players get the message, you'll find that there'll be less and less that that free kick is called. So that's my take on that, Tony. It's probably time for me to give my votes for the Carlton Essendon match round three. Not an easy thing to do, Tony, because we had a lot of good players. However, I begin with one vote to our fullback of the day, but also the year at the moment, Sam Rowe. Sam, in the past 3 weeks, has taken some big scalps. Round one, Jack Revolt. Round two, Jesse Hogan. And round three, Joe Danaher. He's kept the three of them to the collective tally of one goal. And that has got to go a long way to Carlton winning games. I give two votes to his offside of Lockie Plowman. Great rebounding defender, GWS recruit. Certainly vindicated the faith of our list manager, Stephen Silvani, to get he and Marchbank across. Plowman at 22 is going to be there for a very long time as a faded member of the back half. And Marchbank alongside means that we're in pretty good hands with our youth. And three votes to the man of the moment, the captain, Mark Murphy. Couldn't fold his game. A superb game from the leader. Everything that you want from your captain, Murphy delivered. And it was just great to see him leading from the front. So that's my 3-2-1. Now, Tony, we have the game against Gold Coast Saturday night at Etihad Stadium. We want the place packed to the rafters. Are you available? Are you heading along? What will you be doing?
I'm actually going on a fishing trip.
Are you?
Tony, yeah. So
you're not going with Jezza, are you? He likes fishing these days. He tends to head out to Tinny rather than get to football matches.
Well, I know where he lives, actually, off Altona there. He's a perfect posse for fishing.
He'd be up for it. If you're going fishing, you might have to get in touch with him.
A lot of good flathead out there. And they're big ones, too.
Where do you go?
Well, we go off Queenscliff, we go off Werribee South. Werribee South we've been a few times lately.
Yeah, yeah.
Catching these big bay trout.
Yeah.
Big,
yeah.
And they're beautiful in the oven. You know, Werribee South is the place to go.
My great uncle had a little shack there when he first came to Australia. He used to catch flathead down there, so obviously it's a pretty good spot.
Well, I think they're getting bigger, the flathead. There must be something in Werribee that they feed on. Because I caught one the other day, about 2 weeks ago. It was, we measured it, it was 55 centimetres and it had two big fillets on either side, as big as my arms. They were huge.
Yeah, beautiful, good eating too.
Absolutely, and great to pull in too.
Magnificent.
When you feel that tug on the line, you go, gee, I've got a monster here.
Yes.
You bring it up and there's this huge flathead.
And a euphoric moment that can only be truly measured by a Carlton victory in terms of the comparisons, Tony. We hope that this is the beginning of a role for the Carlton Football Club. I'm sure you'll be...
I'll be listening to it. Don't you worry about that. And if I'm near a television, I'll be watching it, absolutely.
Yeah. And in closing, Tony, while I have you here, you know, you've been a supporter for a long, long time. What does Carlton actually mean to you?
It's. I love it because, I've been to a couple of the Carltonians functions, which is also fantastic. And I remember talking to, I was sitting next to, I think it was Dot, who's a lady who's been following Carlton since, she was Miss Carlton 1947, she said. And she told me some wonderful stories about what it was like in the early days. And I think that's what it is, the history of Melbourne, really. I mean... and the players that have come through, their life stories, where they came from, what they've gone on to do. I mean, you know, I see Jack Elliott come into work every Friday to talk to his son, Tom, and Tom and I chat about Carlton all the time, and he's another big Carlton icon. I know he's some people like him and some people don't like him, but his heart was always in the right spot for the club. So that's what I like about, and for Damien, my son in particular, because he's a really big football mad. For him, the winters he'd be lost in wintertime. Without it, you know, he watches all the football shows, he watches all of the games, he knows every statistic that there is to know, and through that, it's like it permeates into me. I guess it's too that when you were a kid, you followed it, and now you're older, and you're still a kid when you're following it, but you're older, you're an older kid. And to watch young kids when they come into the ground and see the players, you know, get an autograph or something, like they're heroes. You know, I remember seeing James Gobbo in the rooms one day, and here's this guy who was the governor of Victoria. He was a Supreme Court judge, and he was like a kid in the rooms when he was with the Carlton footballers. That's what football does.
Very well said, Tony. It's a lovely note to end this discussion today. It's been a pleasure to have you here and to hear you reflect on the club and what it means to you. And good luck with the flathead at the weekend. But keep an ear to the radio and keep calling Carlton so glowingly as you do on 3OW with Tom. It's lovely to hear.
Yeah, well, it's been an honour and a pleasure and a privilege to be here in these magnificent... Ladies and gentlemen, if you've never been to these facilities here... At the old Princes Park, come and what's it called? Icon Park now, is it? There's some wonder. Have a cup of coffee and have somebody. Can you have lunch here?
Of course you can. We'll put pasta on, Tony. Why not?
Excellent. You come along here and enjoy it, because I tell you what, it's really come a long way.
Thanks again, Tony. Arrivederci. Good luck to everyone who listens to the Two Tones, and we'll be back with Tony Moclair next week. Thank you.
Ciao.